Podcast. Trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay. Just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Hello, is this thing on? Sorry, it's been a while since we've used this thing, so welcome back. This is Pulse of the Pack. In case you forgot the sound of my voice, this is Jacob Westendorf, your host. And joined with me, as always, is Jason Perrone. Jason, it's been, probably 2 or 3 weeks, I'm guessing, because I don't know for sure. But how have you been? How's life? Are you still married? Are you still alive? Is your son 17 and off to college? I don't even know anymore.
Wow, that's crazy, because we chat every day. So I guess I got a lot to catch you up on, Jacob. I guess I should probably send written recaps of our chats to you afterwards, just so you can reference your notes. So, well, welcome back, my friend. I don't know the exact date, but if I'm looking at the list here, I mean, it's been almost a month, but it's funny because you and Ross and Cody have more room now. So I feel like I hear your voice pretty regularly, which is a good thing. And it's a great show, by the way, for those of you folks out there who haven't started listening to the War Room and are big into the draft and draft coverage. These three guys do a great job. They Ross, Jacob, and Cody. So definitely be following that. That's also part of our Packers Talk Network family. But doing well, man. And I think, I don't know how it's been for you down there, but for us up here, weather's been fantastic. It's been warm, 50s, 60s. All the snow is melting away just in time for another cold front and some more snow to come piling through here later this week. But I'll take this little spring and winter deal that we got going on. Definitely not going to complain. And it's always good to be talking Packers football because, as we know, with the 30-day layoff that we've had here on Pulse, few and far between during these particular months. So it's good to be back in the saddle, man.
It is. I have football withdrawal, as they called it, on NFL Network this weekend as I was watching some of the reruns from some games this season. Not all Packers games. I was even watching some. I watched the Steelers and the Ravens, watched a couple other games. And, yeah, we have a warm front here as well. I actually took – my baseball team has started practice. We started indoors. I believe our first practice was the night before it was either the night before the NFC Championship game or the night before Packers and Cowboys. I can't remember to be 100% sure. I believe it was the night before Packers and Cowboys, but I can't be 100% sure on that. So we started indoors, but I actually had an outside practice. It was 65 degrees here on Saturday, so that was nice. And, yeah, it's going to be 70 degrees here on Wednesday. And then, yeah, true to form here in the Midwest, it'll be, 34 and wind on Saturday, this Saturday. So a week apart, we go from 64 to 34. Well, if that isn't the Midwest, I don't know what is. And, yeah, as you said, 30-day withdrawal or, you know, whatever it ended up being. Packers football, not a whole lot there. There has been some off-season news, however, since we last spoke. And we did talk about it on War Room, as you said. Myself, Ross Uglum, a bit of reunion for us. As you know, we spoke regularly when we were doing From the Benches. And then Cody Bauer, who we've had on this show several times. And then, yeah, the three of us are together. We do War Room. We're four shows deep. We've talked quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends. In regards to the NFL draft, something we spoke about recently was the Packers have released two players since the season officially ended, those being Sam Shields and James Starks. And let's start with the better of those two players, that being Sam Shields. It frees up about $9 million in cap space. He said after the NFC Championship game that he still wants to play. He had a Instagram post that basically had, about a million hashtags in it. And basically saying he was upset. He wanted to at least retire a Packer. It was a difficult decision, difficult spot for the Packers to be in, obviously. Jason, just kind of give your thoughts on the Sam Shields situation. What's your opinion on the move? And then what's your favorite memory of Sam Shields as a Green Bay Packer?
You know, this is so, this is so funny, Jacob. So I was literally thinking, I think we talked about this on our last show, and I know that we did talk about both Shields and Starks, but I don't think at that point the moves involving these guys had been announced or official yet. And then I'm remembering that actually what it was that I think you guys talked about it on War Room, and so I'm thinking, you know, hey, that's where I last heard it. It's I got kind of confused between that show and ours, which I shouldn't because I'm definitely not a draftnik by any means. But I kind of, you know, the point of that was I kind of know where you stand on this whole thing. And, yeah, I think, you know, we did talk a little bit about Shields and gave our opinion, I think, a little bit last time because I remember telling the story, which I've told 1,000 times, of the Chiefs game and how he chased Macklin down on that long catch and run down the sideline. I think this was a move the Packers had to make, and we've seen them do this before. People want to think that the team is looking out for the player and they're trying to save Sam Shields from himself because of the concussion that after 4 or 5 months he was still not recovered from and still not out of the protocol, which pretty much tells you, and I don't mean to steal your thunder, Jacob, but you know I agree with it 100%. You made a great point on War Room, which was the next time he gets a concussion, what are we looking at? So the Packers had to minimize the risk here, and there's obviously a money concern, and so let's not fool ourselves into thinking that that didn't come into play as part of the team's decision. They've got a salary cap to manage, and they've got to infuse that position group with talent. We saw the struggles that Demaryius Randle had. Quentin Rollins, Ladarius Gunter did his best, but he's only so much of what he can be, and Micah Hyde at corner, and then you start getting into the Dimitri Goodsons of the world and the Josh Hawkins and the Mackinson Dorlient, and it's slim pickings. So I think the Packers have decided to go in a different direction and use that money elsewhere. And Shields, probably still from an age and from a waist down standpoint, probably still has a lot to offer. But the problem is the concussions and his propensity for them. And so Packers had to do this. It's a shame. You ask about your favorite Shields memory. I don't know how you go away from the game sealing interception in Chicago to beat the Bears in the NFC Championship game in 2010. You know, Shields was a rookie that year, an undrafted rookie who came up and became the third corner in the nickel behind Charles Woodson and Tremont Williams. That defense just had so many names on it that we've all come to long for 7 years later now. You know, Shields was one of the youngest and one of the you know, most in need of development players. And then here he was a couple of years later getting paid big time, and he's becoming the number one corner and having some really good games against other teams' number one receivers. So we'll miss his speed, and I'm going to go with the NFC Championship game, the sealing interception, because, again, I don't know how you beat that. I mean, I liked the play that he made when I was in the house just because it was amazing to watch his speed live and in person. I wish him all the best. I don't know if he's going to get another chance to play football, but Packers did the right thing here, definitely. I definitely support the team. You know, we love players. We love what they do for us. But at the end of the day, and, Jacob, I think you'll agree, we cheer for the jersey and what's best for the team. And I think that's what we have to kind of be thinking about here and be grateful for, is that the Packers did, I think, what was best for them in the long term.
You kind of mentioned that I've stated my opinion on another platform, but, you know, some people don't listen to both shows. And if you don't, you should. But I'm not going to plug War Room for too long on this show, obviously, because this is my original show, and this show is my baby. As much as I do love War Room, I'm not going to promote favoritism, but I do love this show more than War Room because this show is year-round. But my opinion on this is, from just a football standpoint, it sucks because the Packers' cornerback situation is a little dicey. You know, we talked about Demaryius Randle regressing. We talked about Quentin Rollins regressing. The Packers' best cornerback last season was Ladarius Gunter, and no disrespect to Ladarius Gunter, but that's not necessarily a good thing. Then you start getting into, like you said, Mackinson Dorlient. Josh Hawkins, a raw athletic player, but still raw athletic undrafted free agent. Micah Hyde played a significant role down the stretch. And, you know, I grew to like Hyde eventually, but he's still not the best corner on a Super Bowl contending team, or at least he shouldn't be. So from that standpoint, the move sucks. But then you got to add everything else into it. And that's where it's the only move that the Packers could make. You mentioned Sam Shields. Mike McCarthy said it in his postseason press conference that Sam Shields still had not cleared the concussion protocol by the time he had that press conference. That was in the middle of January. Sam Shields entered, actually the end of January. Sam Shields entered the concussion protocol on September 12th. That is 4 months later. Something Ross Uglum says all the time is if you have one concussion that's a season ender, that means the next concussion is a season ender. You can't pay a cornerback or any professional football player $9 million and rely on him to be a significant contributor when he has, A, a propensity of concussions, and, B, when the next concussion is going to set him out for who knows how long. And I was saying on, you know, War Room of every time he makes a tackle, you're going to hold your breath and go, oh, my God, is he going to get up? And that's the stage we're at with Sam Shields. And if you look at the play he got his concussion on, it wasn't a big smashing hit because that's not the kind of player that Shields is anyways. It was just an innocent – I mean, there's no innocent tackles in football for the most part, but it was a relatively innocent play. It just kind of happened. And that play kept him out for 4 months. Now, Sam Shields still says he wants to play. And I hope for his sake that he doesn't, because I understand. You know, I wasn't fortunate enough to be good enough to play beyond my high school career. I had a couple opportunities, but didn't deem it worthwhile. Chose to pursue other opportunities. It's like that scene from Moneyball when they said, we're all told at some point we can't play the kids' games anymore. We're either told at 18 or we're all told at 40, but we're all told. And I understand it's hard to be told that you can't play the kids' game anymore. And Sam Shields probably feels robbed because he's still a young kid. And he's still in his athletic prime from a speed, size, athletic standpoint. But from a health standpoint, you want this guy to be able to live a young, healthy life. And it's just unfortunate because, you know, Sam Shields coming into this season, the only player to intercept more passes than him was Richard Sherman since 2011. And Richard Sherman, by many accounts, is one of, if not the best cornerback in football. I understand a lot of people that listen to the show probably don't like Richard Sherman, but that's true. He is. And you probably don't like him because he is good. If he was bad, nobody would even talk about him. Nobody would care about his antics because he was a crappy football player. But he's a good one, so that's why we care. Sam Shields is on the short list of top cornerbacks in football when he's healthy. But I mentioned, you know, I hope that he can find a job at the University of Miami, or maybe, you know, something the Packers did for Jonathan Franklin was find him a consultant job in the organization. They're convinced he's going to be the mayor of somewhere someday. Hopefully he can find a job somewhere to keep him involved in football. But something that really stuck with me about Mike McCarthy was when he said about Nick Collins' injury was, you know, if it was my son, I couldn't let him play. And I imagine that entered the mind of Mike McCarthy and Ted Thompson as well when making this decision. Because I'm sure the conversation came up of, I still want to play. And McCarthy and Thompson probably said, we can't do it. We just can't do it with a clean conscience. They can't put him on the field. Even though it's arguably the weakest position, or the most uncertain position, if not the weakest on the team. And that sucks because, you know, like I said, Sam Shields is a great player. And the Packers clearly missed him this season. I liken, you know, I've compared it to last season's loss of Jordy Nelson from the standpoint of they never fully recovered from the loss of Nelson, and the trickle-down effect was too much to overcome. They never fully recovered from the loss of Shields, and the trickle-down effect was too much to overcome this season. As far as favorite memory, Jason, you mentioned it. I've said it a million times. I live in the Chicago area. The ratio of Bear to Packer fan, especially of that time in my life, the people I was associated with was a lot to me. And I am Packers guy where I am from. When people think Packers fan, they think of Jacob Westendorf. And when the Bears played the Packers for the NFC title, I was the number one guy on everybody's mind. I was the first guy everybody was going to call if the Bears had won that game. And I was the first guy nobody wanted to hear from if the Packers won that game. And Sam Shields, the sense of relief and the sense of joy from that game when he intercepted that pass to seal the Packers' first trip to the Super Bowl in my cognizant lifetime. Because I'll be honest with you guys, I don't remember much from that Carolina Panthers game. The things I remember now are because of times I've rewatched that game. So I don't really remember the Packers clinching their spot in the Super Bowl that year. I remember sitting down to watch that game as a, I believe I was 5 at the time. But I don't remember much. I remember every single second and every single emotion of that game. And Sam Shields turned me into a sobbing child because finally my team was going to the Super Bowl. That's my favorite memory of Sam Shields. Jason, like you said, I don't know how you can pick anything else. If you wanted me to, the thing I picked on War Room was he had a really good game against A.J. Green. But even that doesn't – it just doesn't compare because he sent the Packers to the frickin' Super Bowl. I mean, how can you pick anything else? So that's unfortunate. It frees up about $9 million in cap space. The James Starks move. This was less about cap space and more about performance. And I mentioned, Jason, this was on our show. I mentioned when they re-signed him that I did not want to re-sign him. And I know it sounded like at the time that I was splitting hairs, but I'm not big on giving running backs third contracts. I'm not big on signing 30-year-old running backs. I know he was great the year before. I know he was a big weapon. I know he was good insurance for Eddie Lacy. I didn't care. When a running back is done, he's done. And you saw that, for example, the previous year with Marshawn Lynch. For example, the Seahawks game. The Packers played the Seahawks at Lambeau Field. And I came away from that game in 2015, and the first thing I said was, I was in the house for that game. And I said, Marshawn Lynch is done. You hit a wall and you fall off a cliff. And I had no use for James Starks anymore for the Packers. I said, get out. You know, Ted Thompson, it's better to let go of a guy a year too early than a year too late. And I wanted the Packers to get rid of him. And then it was pretty evident through most of last year that James Starks was just not the same player that he was in 2015. My favorite or least favorite stat from last year is that James Starks averaged fewer yards per carry than Tom Brady, my mother's favorite quarterback, Tom Brady. And for those of you that follow me on Twitter during the Super Bowl, you know exactly how my mother actually feels about Tom Brady. Tom Brady's not mistaking anybody for Michael Vick. Now, that's a much smaller sample size, I know that. But James Starks just didn't have it anymore. It's a good move. I know Ty Montgomery's the only running back left on the roster, and we'll talk more about the running back situation as the offseason progresses as far as what we want to do with that position. But I'm okay with Montgomery being the only guy. I'm okay with, you know, going into next season with a running back tandem of Montgomery and re-signing Eddie Lacy on the cheap and having John Crockett as that third guy or a sixth-round pick or whatever, you know, whatever they decide to do. But I just saw young, fresh legs as a better option than James Starks, and I was ready to move on from him going into last year. So, yeah, that was a good move. My favorite memory from James Starks, obviously, Keacock in the Super Bowl run. And that, you know, he was really a – once he found his niche and was able to stay healthy, he was really a good cog in some really good offenses. But my favorite memory for a specific play is – the San Diego Chargers game, a throwback weekend last year, he goes to his left and comes all the way back to the right and runs for a 60-yard touchdown. Jeff Janis picks up a great block. That was a really cool play that comes to mind. He was great in the screen game. He did some really good things. I don't want to be disrespectful to James Starks, but it was just time. I think he's done as far as, you know, like I said, when a running back hits a wall, he hits a wall, and you've seen that several times. And, you know, it was just time for James Starks to move on. it's time for the Packers to move forward with Ty Montgomery and another back, whether that's Eddie Lacy or, you know, a mid-round draft pick. I don't necessarily think a high draft pick and a running back would be a wise choice. And that's a discussion we can certainly have if you'd like, but and I think we'll certainly have one when we get to the free agency portion of this show. But I just don't think that 30-plus-year-old running backs are something you want to ever employ on your roster. And I don't think that James Starks was just a useful player anymore. So it wasn't so much for the money on this one, but I think it was the only, again, the only choice that they had because he just wasn't an effective player anymore. But, you know, he was. I have fond memories of James Starks. It was just time. So that's my opinion on Starks. Jason, you know, briefly address James Starks, and then we'll move ahead to some of the stuff we've written, actually. We'll talk some of our content, which is exciting.
Yeah, and I think I gave a lot of my time for Starks to Shields. I don't really have a whole lot to add. Starks just, you know, like you said, time came, age hits, you go downhill. Starks went downhill big time. The writing might have been on the wall at the end of last year when he fumbled the 4 games straight. You're asking me what my favorite James Starks memory is, and part of the problem here is that I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know. I forgot about that run against the Chargers. I think I forgot about a lot of good things that James Starks did just because of how much he struggled and how little we've had to cheer for the last 2 years. So I guess I'll go with his one lone touchdown that he had against the Bears in that same NFC Championship game. That game's getting a lot of love from me today because, honestly, I don't remember a lot of individual plays that Starks made otherwise. So, I mean, he was a key cog that year, and he did some good things along the way. But, like you said, definitely time to move in a different direction. I'm excited to see who the Packers can bring in. Maybe they find the next Jonathan Franklin who, you know, to this day might still be doing some amazing things in the Packers offense. We'll never know. But, you know, get a guy like that, I'd be perfectly happy to swap him out for Stark. So that's about all I got to say about that.
Thank you, Forrest Gump. So, Jason, you wrote a story that aired on Cheesehead TV today about the Packers potentially taking advantage of some other team's mistakes. So feel free. I don't want to steal some of your thunder. So feel free to kind of explain what your story was about and then kind of discuss some of the guys in that piece.
So went up this morning, if you haven't checked it out, cheeseheadtv.com, and I wrote about the salary cap. Basically, it's about the salary cap, and it's about the fact that NFL teams now, you're starting to see them cut some veterans. You're starting to see some veteran cuts happen now that are guys that are going to be out on the streets now that maybe weren't necessarily scheduled to be free agents. They had another year or two on their contract with the teams, most likely probably 1 year. The dead money from cutting them has fallen off, and the team really risked nothing by letting them go. And so we've seen a few guys become casualties. One of the biggest names, you know, and I don't mean in terms of their career or their level of play, but would be Mario Williams of the Miami Dolphins. The Dolphins signed him to a 2-year deal, realized after last year that he wasn't going to give them the production that they signed him and paid him for, and so they decided to cut bait. So some of the names that I listed here are guys that are not cut yet. They could be. They seem like a good candidate to be cut. But the big thing is that the Packers, fortunately, are never in a situation where they're having to cut a guy because they simply can't afford his salary anymore. Russ Ball, Ted Thompson, the Packers have all done a fantastic job. You know, complain about them all you want for not bringing in enough free agents or for using draft and develop too often. But at least the Packers are never hamstrung or handcuffed, I should say, by a bad salary cap situation. And they really haven't been since Thompson's been here the last 10 years. So it might be something I think we take for granted. And because the Packers always seem to have money, I'm using my quote fingers there, fans feel like they should sign more guys and use that money and you should go into the next season broke. But if they did that, they wouldn't have enough money to even keep some of the guys that they had of their own who are becoming free agents. So, you know, which is a whole other topic of itself. But a couple names that I threw out there may or may not necessarily have any teeth to them because, again, some of these guys are still with their current teams, but Darrell Revis could potentially become a candidate to hit the streets. Now, he's got the issue with the pending charges against him for this arrest and whether he was being stalked or he did get into a fight and assault somebody, not a good look and probably something that even if Ted Thompson were thinking about it, if he hit the street, probably going to shy away from it. All I know is that we know that Ted Thompson seemed to like him in 2007 when he was drafted. And so we'll probably never know what would have happened there if he would have been maybe like a Julius Peppers that Ted wanted to bring in for a year or two. I mentioned Mario Williams. He's another guy I talked about. The Giants may or may not be able to bring Jason Pierre-Paul back, and Pierre-Paul's only 28 years old. So there's a potential boost to your defensive line and your pass rush, something that the Packers definitely need a little bit more of. Jacob, you actually mentioned this player in a piece that you wrote not too long ago, which is Calais Campbell of the Cardinals, which is a great outside-the-box option. One thing I can tell you, living in Arizona as long as I did, is that the Cardinals, as spotty as their success has been as a franchise, they do tend to hang on to guys who have been franchise players and have been with them for a long time. So don't know if Campbell makes his way out of Arizona, but he's a possibility. The one that seemed to get the most play in the comments was Vontae Davis because he's a corner, and he's only 28 years old, and Packers need a cornerback. So with a new GM in Indianapolis and with so many needs that they have, does Davis get cut? And then, you know, I opined a little bit about Jimmy Graham, probably pie in the sky, even if he did hit the streets. You know, he's got no dead money on his contract, so Seattle wanted to let him go. They could save on his salary, but he's going to command some pretty good money in the open market. Had to throw Adrian Peterson in the mix, as disgusting as that is to some of you, simply because the fact of the matter is he's not going to be playing for the Vikings at the price that he's at right now, and chances are he's gone. I live here in the Twin Cities, and everything that I've read indicates that the Vikings are going to let him go. So that was my point, was just kind of an early look at some of the guys that could hit the street, and there's probably going to be some more. There's some talk about Connor Barwin with the Eagles and how the Packers may or may not have interest in him. Now, those are always interesting stories to hit the news this early in the offseason period, because there hasn't really been a lot of opportunity for teams to legally talk to these players. So the fact that the Packers would be interested if Connor Barwin hit the free agent market, well, where is that coming from? Where's the source on that? Those are always the most interesting parts of those stories to me. But, you know, it's never too – I mean, it's never really an off topic or a never off-limits topic to talk about free agency. We can joke tongue-in-cheek as much as we want about Ted Thompson and his reluctance to use true free agency as a boost. But we keep hearing over and over, and Jacob, you mentioned – I think in your last podcast, maybe it was on War Room, and Ian Rappaport comes out again and says, well, the Packers are expected to be players in free agency, and we've laughed at that before. But remember, 2 years ago in 2014, coming into the 2014 season, which is now 3 years ago, they did end up bringing in Julius Peppers and LaTroy Guyon, both of which were with the team for three seasons, and both of which made a pretty decent impact. So never say never, but thought I'd get the conversation started a little bit early and just kind of get a temp check of what people out there are thinking and whether or not they really think Thompson's going to go after some free agents. But always a great thing to throw out there and throw up against the wall and see what sticks. So if you haven't, again, if you haven't had a chance to take a look at it, go check it out on CheeseheadTV.com. Throw a comment at the end. Let me know if you think I'm crazy, if you agree, whatever. Always appreciate the support.
The most interesting name, obviously, in there, because, well, maybe not most interesting, but an interesting name. All of them are interesting, but the rivalry, the Brett Favre connection, Rob Domofsky wrote a story on it. Adrian Peterson, the Packers have a need at running back. What, Jason, you didn't really give a set opinion on what you thought there. What do you think about the idea of Adrian Peterson doing what Brett Favre essentially did? Different circumstances, obviously, but what are your thoughts there?
There's nothing that compares to a quarterback, and Brett Favre could still play. The Vikings are always desperate for a quarterback. Let's be honest. It doesn't matter what season or what year it is. They're always desperate for a quarterback. Even when they have a quarterback, they don't. So it's impossible to compare these situations. You're talking about a running back who, yes, was great in his heyday, but over the last two seasons has shown us absolutely no signs that he's going to have some resurgence at his age after some of the injuries that he's been through. Then you throw in the PR aspect of it, and I see people commenting and saying, if the Packers sign Adrian Peterson, I'm not going to watch any Packers games, which I've heard that before, and a lot of people say, I think these are the same people that said they were going to move to Canada when Trump got elected president and they still live in the States. So I'll believe that when I see it, but I'm still against it just I am against it from the PR standpoint, so I'll make my position clear there. But it's really more to me about what is Peterson going to bring that, you can't get from a younger guy that you can actually bring in and not only have this year, but next year, the year after that, and a year after that, and get 3 or 4 years in this offense and a chance to blossom and flourish. And maybe, just maybe, Ted hits the jackpot finally on a running back. He finds another Eddie Lacy, but one that doesn't have weight problems and doesn't have commitment issues and can stay on the field and solve that position long term. Adrian Peterson at this point is a really shiny whistle or shiny toy that sits in the bin in the garage and it looks cool, but how much life does it really have left in him? And so he's a no for me, but I had to throw him out there.
And I get why you did, obviously. There's other people that have thrown his name out there as well. And I'm certainly not going to bash you for throwing that. I'm not going to bash anybody else for throwing his name out there. It's a storyline. You were nicer about it than I will be. Adrian Peterson has a name, and when he was healthy and younger, he was one of the best running backs I've ever seen. As far as in person, he's the best running back I've ever seen play. He is older now. He is coming off. He's had two major knee injuries. And let's not forget that last season, even when he was healthy, he looked old and washed up. Now, I know that Vikings offensive line was a train wreck, so maybe I'm willing to give him a little bit of slack there. But I'm also not going to forget that Adrian Peterson's an older running back. And like I mentioned, when running backs hit a wall, they're done. That there is no fountain of youth for running backs. It's not a thing. It doesn't exist. If there's an exception to that rule, please feel free to tell me what it is. But I don't think of anything off the top of my head as to where I've ever seen it. And everybody wants to talk about the PR thing. That, to me, is dancing around the issue. Adrian Peterson is a child beater. That's what he is. And I'm not going to have a discussion about corporal punishment. That's not what that is. That's not what that was. The guy stuffed leaves into the mouth of a child so you could not hear him cry and beat him to a pulp. That's what that was. And if you want more evidence, Google it. The story's out there. The pictures are out there. I don't want that guy on my team. I don't want him on my team from a football standpoint, and I really don't want him on my team from that standpoint. Adrian Peterson has no use to the Green Bay Packers from a football standpoint, and he really has no use to the team from that standpoint either. So I'm not dancing around that issue. Adrian Peterson's a child beater, and he's not a good football player anymore. Those are just facts, in my opinion. You're welcome to disagree with me, but I don't know how you defend what I call the indefensible. So that's that. Some other interesting names you threw in there, obviously. Calais Campbell's one. I had him in my story, so we'll talk about that here in a minute. Vontae Davis was one, obviously, as well, because he's a corner. He's young. The Colts have a big contract for him. He has a big cap number, very little dead money if they let him go. Darrell Revis is one. That is a basket case because those are four felony charges. He was a name who, Jason, if the Jets had just cut him, I could have seen the Packers making a play because Ted Thompson loved him in that draft, and they were going to pick him at pick number 16. That's widely reported. And now there's no chance that guy's going to be a Green Bay Packer for the same reasons I just mentioned about Peterson. The same things apply here if that legal process plays out. But there's no way. Jimmy Graham, that's one high in the sky from the standpoint. I don't see the Seahawks letting him go. He was good last year. Finally, I think he was comfortable in the offense. The Seahawks figured out how to use him. They figured out, hey, you get a big, fast receiving tight end, and you don't make him a damn blocker. Don't ask a player to be something he's not. Make him a dynamic receiving tight end. Lo and behold, they did, and he was. What a concept. Make a player what he's good at. Jimmy Graham in Green Bay would just be phenomenal, and I would love every second of that. It would just also cost a crap ton of money. The Packers, I just can't picture them spending a crap ton of money when for – a much smaller deal, they can get Jared Cook, who, while not as good, can provide a more valuable deal at the end of the day. And they'll draft somebody, I imagine, in the top 100 picks and kind of work their tight end tandem that way. Free agency, ultimately, there's going to be some surprise cuts. And those are the guys that ultimately Ted Thompson goes after. I don't know how much I agree with that because ultimately I know the compensatory picks are valuable. They're lottery tickets. That's what we call them. And you're going to get – it's going to affect the formula. The Packers this year have some guys that may or may not leave. But ultimately, if you can find a player that can help you, a formula for a draft pick should not affect getting a player that you think can help you for the foreseeable future. If the Packers can get a guy like, I mean, just throwing names out here, obviously. Dre Kirkpatrick, for just an example's sake. If that's somebody the Packers believe can help them, they shouldn't pass on a guy like that, or Calais Campbell. They shouldn't pass on a guy like that because he's an unrestricted free agent, and that'll affect the compensatory pick formula. That's something that's a little frustrating from the free agency standpoint. But that's my opinion. Obviously, you're welcome to disagree with that as well. That's something we encourage as far as this show goes. My story that I wrote was five potential free agents that the Packers could potentially target. And the joke that I made was, okay, once you stop laughing at the title of the story, was here are five guys that the Packers could potentially target. And Jason, the saying is that great minds think alike. I guess the other saying is, you know, strange minds also think alike. So I don't know what title we fall under there. So that's a little terrifying from that standpoint. But some of the names, the first name I came up with, obviously, was Calais Campbell. It's a weird position that I started with as far as defensive line because the Packers only play two guys at that position. But Calais Campbell is a name where him and Mike Daniels, that's a guy the Packers were interested in years ago, but he ended up getting a really big contract for the Arizona Cardinals. He's 30 now, but he's still very good, and he is really, to a T, a prototype for the Packers' defensive end position. And having him and Mike Daniels in the middle of that defense, I know they have Kenny Clark, I know they have Dean Lowry, and I know they have LaTroy Guyon, but going deep with those guys and adding Calais Campbell to the mix, that would add some punch to their nickel rushing tandem of having Campbell and Mike Daniels to the middle of their defense. The big thing is always going to be money, obviously, but having Campbell and Daniels to push the pocket, that would be similar to, and actually probably better than, having B.J. Raji and Cullen Jenkins, which is what they had in their defense of 2010. And something that, a stat that I got from Bill Huber was, Mike Daniels had 20 quarterback hurries. The rest of the defensive line combined for 9. The next highest on their team was Kenny Clark with 4. They need more pressure out of the middle of their defense, and pairing Campbell and Daniels would go a long way. Some other guys I had, the pie-in-the-sky guy I had was Stephon Gilmore out of Buffalo. The long shot there is because he's looking for top-5 cornerback money. I understand that. The idea that I kind of have there is you're essentially replacing Sam Shields' salary and probably adding a few more million bucks. The Packers have $45 million in salary cap to play with. They could potentially add more salary cap dollars if some guys are willing to restructure or extend contracts, play with money a little bit. That's something we'll talk about a little bit later. Some other guys I have are Morris Claiborne of Dallas. That is the former 4th overall pick out of the Cowboys. The reason I had two corners in here is because Tony Pauline, a guy from Walter Football, the Vic Ketchman out of Packers.com cites him very often. Says the Packers in free agency and the draft are looking at, quote, cornerbacks and lots of them. Now, with that in mind, it only makes sense that the Packers will cast a wide net toward cornerbacks in free agency and the draft. Does that make sense? He's an intriguing player with physical tools, and Joe Witt is still one of the best assistant coaches in all of football. I know the Packers corners were kind of a failure last year, but I still believe in him. Maybe that's a guy that you can get some value out of, and Witt can coach him up to kind of get out of him what the Cowboys couldn't. The other guys I had were Zach Brown, the inside linebacker of Buffalo. He's somebody I really liked last year as a free agent the Packers could target, and he had a great year. He would add some speed to the middle of that defense, so something that they still – their inside linebacker tandem of Blake Martinez and Jake Ryan I think is okay, but I still think they could use some athleticism there, and they don't really have a whole lot of athleticism there. I have an opinion on that that we'll talk about a little bit later, something they could do to do that. And then the other one I threw in there was Martellus Bennett. That's a player that they were interested in last year for their tight end position if he was released. That's a guy that they could be interested in if they don't re-sign Jared Cook. And my reasoning on that was if Cook and Bennett have the same sort of market, Bennett is a better player than Jared Cook, and he's a better blocker. Similar pass catcher, probably a better pass catcher there as well. If you're going to get the same kind of money out of the two players, you're better off, in my opinion, signing the better player. I know Jared Cook loved his time in Green Bay. He already knows the offense. But Bennett's a better player, and you saw this year that if Bennett's on a team that wins, you can tame his quote-unquote free spirit. And I think this is a place that obviously the Packers have been very successful. I imagine they'll be successful again next season as long as Aaron Rodgers is healthy. If the market is similar, Bennett's a guy that you could go after. Ultimately, I don't think the market will be similar. According to what Rob Domofsky's reporting, you're expecting a 1 or 2 year deal for probably $3 to $4 million, according to what he was saying. So if that's going to be the case, then obviously I expect Jared Cook to be back, because I'm thinking about $5 or $6 million and probably a longer deal for Martellus Bennett. But those are the guys that I had as the five free agents. Jason, any names? Obviously Campbell, but any other names stick out to you there?
Martellus Bennett is one that's been speculated before, so that's always a good one to bring up. And you know what? You've been banging on the drum for the second tight end, and as somebody who was very cognizant for the 1995-96 Packers and that championship team, let's not forget Mark Shimura, Keith Jackson, they had the two-headed monster tight end there. It was nothing but good things for that offense. You give Aaron Rodgers two tight ends and two big targets, and then you throw the other guys in there around him, Jordy Nelson, Devontae Adams, let's assume Randall Cobb. I think you've got a huge problem for opposing defenses. So who's to say that Cook and Bennett can't both be the guy? Richard Rodgers has reached his ceiling. We know what he is. We know what he isn't. And he's more isn't than is. So I think the Packers need to stop this we love our guys and being loyal to their guys and find playmakers, because Aaron Rodgers said it himself in his post-game, you know, postseason press conference. You know, we need to retool a little bit, which was basically his way of saying, get me some players in here. So let's put aside the conventional wisdom of, well, we got to give Richard Rodgers another year to develop. We always give our guys, you know, 3 years. Well, this would be year four. No, bring in a playmaker. So who's to say they can't have both? I mean, you know, I'm getting a little greedy here, but it's time. You know, we got to take advantage of all of these great core of nucleus of players that we have, that the Packers have, while they're under contract and while they're still serviceable. So some good names, definitely good names there. And like I said, you know, when we were talking about this whole conversation first started, there's going to be more to come. So, and there's probably going to be a couple surprises. You never know how training camps and mini camps are going to play out, and players get frustrated with their teams. And so do they command a trade? Do they get released? You know, let's not forget, we saw the Carolina Panthers end up having to do with Josh Norman. You just never know. So keep your eyes out there. It's definitely something, hopefully not the last time we're going to have this conversation. Hopefully there's some more names we can keep this thing going, because obviously there's not a ton to talk about during the offseason, but one of the most fun things to do is speculate how a guy who you like or who we like or who we know is a really good player would look in green and gold. So now I guess we kind of go from the guys from the outside who haven't worn the uniform to maybe a couple who have.
Yeah, and something else I want to bang the drum on again was, like, I had a piece air today on FanRag about getting that second tight end, and I focused mostly on the draft and saying, yeah, bring back Jared Cook. I'm considering that almost a given of bringing back Cook. But, yeah, I mean, you're mentioning getting a little greedy with Martellus Bennett. And, yeah, I mean, I'll admit, that's something that would be getting a little greedy. But, yeah, I mean, the New England Patriots had a really good idea of Rob Gronkowski and Martellus Bennett. And before Aaron Hernandez's, let's call them legal troubles, they had a really good tandem of Rob Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez. Those are two of the top five or six tight ends in football. maybe higher than that. I mean, Rob Gronkowski is the best one, and then you've got Aaron Hernandez falls in wherever you think he may. That was really good, and I don't see – I mean, Richard Rodgers, I'm done beating around the bush with him. Richard Rodgers sucks, and that's just fact. He's a useful player in the red zone. He's a possession receiver, and that is all he is. He's not a good blocker, which is what he's supposedly on this team for now that they have Jared Cook. He does nothing after the catch, and he can't separate from anybody. He caught a Hail Mary in Detroit. That's great. That's an awesome memory that I'll never forget. But you saw this offense when Jared Cook got hurt. I don't see why, with Mike McCarthy's love of tight ends, I don't see why the Packers' tight end position has to be Jared Cook, and if Jared Cook rolls an ankle, the athleticism on the tight end position this year was Jared Cook, Richard Rodgers, and Justin Perillo. So Jared Cook, who's athletic, Richard Rodgers, who's not, and Justin Perillo, who I have famously said on the show, looks like a guy that is a beer truck delivery guy. I don't see why the Packers can't have two athletic tight ends on the roster. Now, if Martellus Bennett isn't another guy that you can bring in, if his market is too high and you don't want to pay $10 million to the tight end position, okay, that's fine. Draft another athletic tight end like Jordan Leggett. Or if O.J. Howard slips to your pick at number 29, pick him if there's not a impact edge rusher or a good cornerback there. Pick that guy. Pick David Njoku if he's there in the second round. Pick Jordan Leggett if he's there in the second or third round. Grab Jake Butt in the later rounds if he's available. There's nothing wrong with having two really good tight ends on your roster. I know I can't remember which beat writer it was off the top of my head that said Ted Thompson would say that's fantasy football. Well, no, it's not, because I've seen it in reality. The New England Patriots did it, and the New England Patriots are the standard. The New England Patriots, I know what they've done is phenomenal. But if that's the standard you're chasing, maybe the Packers should be trying to copy them. And if they can find a way to do it, they should. And you already have Jared Cook, who you imagine you're going to be able to get for a relatively affordable contract. Find a way to get another athletic tight end. Whether that's a guy like Bennett, who, again, I imagine that's probably pie in the sky, or an athletic guy. But find a second athletic tight end, for the love of God. I've been banging on this drum since the Packers had JerMichael Finley. And your secondary guys after JerMichael Finley were, with apologies to Packer Nation, guys like Tom Crabtree. No offense to Tom Crabtree. He's funny as hell. But even he would tell you he wasn't that athletic. I don't see why the Packers have this requirement where the secondary tight end has to be this unathletic blocker that can do nothing once the ball is in his hands, especially with an offense that throws the ball as much as this one does. But I move on. Off-season story. There's two guys that are really popular people that a lot of guys are saying, well, they should take a pay cut. And those guys are Randall Cobb and Clay Matthews. Both are slated to make Randall Cobb about $10 million and Clay Matthews about $15 in terms of cap hits next season. My question is, do you expect either one of them to take a pay cut? My answer with Randall Cobb is no, my answer with both of them really, as far as expect, is no, because why would they? That's what they agreed to as far as the contract when they signed their contracts. And, you know, I liken it to modern day, any job that you have in, you know, real life. I understand that the NFL isn't, you know, that's the candy store of jobs, but nobody else would take a pay cut if their boss asked them to. So why would they? Randall Cobb, I understand, has not lived up to his contract. His contract dictates that he is a number one wide receiver. He's not lived up to that contract. I don't think that Randall Cobb is as bad as what the mainstream thought is now. I think that in 2015, so not this past season, but the year before that, I think that they lost the boundary receiver, and I think that slot receivers are reliant on other people to help them get open. I think the Packers did not do a good job of scheming him open, and I think that they lost the guy that helped get him open. And I think that in 2016, some of the targets that he usually gets, one, I think he was playing on one leg for quite some time. I understand this is the NFL, but I think he was playing on one leg for quite some time. And I think once he did get healthy, you saw that some of the targets that typically go to him went to Jared Cook. They went to Jordy Nelson in the slot. They went to Geronimo Allison. Randall Cobb, you still saw that he's still a useful player. Against the Giants, after Jordy Nelson got hurt, he was the best receiver on the field. He was one of the best receivers against the Dallas Cowboys in the game. The Packers scored 34 points. This guy doesn't suck. He's still a very good player. The other thing about asking a guy to take a pay cut is if and when they say no, Andrew Brandt always says you have to be willing to cut them. If you cut Randall Cobb, your receiving core next year is Jordy Nelson, Devontae Adams, and then Geronimo Allison, Trevor Davis, Jeff Janis. Obviously, there's the draft and some free agency and stuff like that to offset the loss of Randall Cobb. But I don't know if I'm willing to cut Randall Cobb just yet. I know Jordy Nelson, I think you're going to transition him to more slot time. I think you've seen that already this year. Ty Montgomery's a running back. If Montgomery was going to be a receiver next year, I'd be more willing to cut Randall Cobb, but he's not. He's a running back. Mike McCarthy's already stated that. Clay Matthews is a little more interesting. I think that something they could do is give him a bit of an extension to move some of the money that he's making this year out, so it's not necessarily a pay cut, but they could spread it out a little bit more. The only issue is the Packers have a lot of their outside linebackers. The only outside linebackers under contract for next season are Clay Matthews and Kyler Fackrell. So the Packers have really no leverage in this situation. So if the Packers go to him and ask him to take a pay cut and he says no, they can't really be prepared to cut him, because if they cut him, they have Kyler Fackrell under contract and that's it. If Nick Perry and Dayton Jones sign elsewhere, Julius Peppers is either going to retire or you imagine they should move on from him. Now the Packers have just Fackrell under contract and they are literally starting over at the most important position on their defense. The Packers have no leverage in this situation. So him to take a pay cut, I think there's things that they could do that don't make him necessarily take a pay cut, but it's kind of disguised as one to kind of help them out in this year and future years as far as an extension to move money out. But I'm not necessarily willing to cut either one of them. If you ask me which one I'm more willing to cut, it's Randall Cobb, just because that position is a little bit deeper. But I don't expect either one of them to take a pay cut. I think that's something where it's kind of, you know, Madden, the franchise mode has kind of made people, everybody thinks they're a general manager, and it's really just not that simple. The dead money off of Cobb's contract is really high, and I just don't see, I still think he's a useful player, and I still think that he's a good player, and I think that you would see if he was in an offense where he was really the clear-cut number two option, which in this offense, especially this past year, he wasn't. You could argue in some cases he was really the number four option in a lot of games. I understand he was making $10 million. I understand that's a lot of money, but I just don't see a need to cut him just yet. Maybe next year, after this season, if you want to go into next season and you have some guys that you know a little more about, if you know more about Trevor Davis, if you know more about a rookie you bring in, if you know Devontae Adams is in the fold for the foreseeable future, and you know Jordy Nelson is going to be in the slot full time, maybe after that. But I'm not ready to cut Randall Cobb just yet. And I don't think you have a choice. Clay Matthews is in the fold for the foreseeable future. Now, I'll get more on him eventually here, but I'm not willing to cut either one of them just yet, and I just don't see a pay cut here. Jason, what do you think about these two guys as far as their salary?
As far as Cobb goes, you know, he took less money than he could have gotten when he signed his deal to stay with the Packers. I think he realized the value of playing in an offense that's run by Aaron Rodgers and what that could do for him in the future. And he also was young enough that he's going to get a third crack at the apple here before he hits 30. So he's got another chance to do this in his prime. So as far as Cobb goes, compared to his production, no, I don't think $10 million is what we got from him. But I'm not so sure that they need to part ways with him. And I think the Packers can afford this slightly inflated contract. In Matthews' case, you kind of already stated really all that needs to be said, which is Clay Matthews has no reason to do the Packers a solid here and reorganize his contract. These guys sign these contracts and have guaranteed money clauses inside of them. This isn't like baseball where they get every penny. You only get the guaranteed money, and they make the other dollars if they hit escalators, if they hit incentives, if they hit certain markers. And there's a high chance that they're going to get injured, and Clay Matthews has definitely had his share of injuries. So the risk of him getting injured again, potentially not getting paid another big contract because of an injury, or, you know, heaven forbid, having to retire because of an injury, is too high. at this point, and he's over 30 now, so he wants to make as much money as he can, and I think he's looking at it from the standpoint of, hey, these contracts favor the teams so much because they can just cut a player and pay a portion of what they agreed they were originally going to pay. And Matthews is thinking to himself probably, even though you don't really ever want to be in a situation where you're paying for past performance, you want to pay for the future. Clay's like, hey, I've given this team a lot. I've done a lot. I've got X number of sacks. I don't know. I think he's two or three all-time on the sack list. In terms of in Packers history, I don't think he's number one. Is he, Jacob?
Not yet. He ended up finishing just behind Reggie White. But he's, I mean, with a solid season next year, he'll pass. He passed Reggie White. He's behind KGB. So he'll pass KGB with a solid season next year.
So with that in mind, he's like, hey, I'm set to be the all-time franchise, the all-time leading sack guy. And this team is almost 100 years old. Like, that's got to be worth something. So, yeah, Clay's not taking a pay cut. They're not going to move on from him, I don't think. I mean, worst-case scenario, we all have a heart attack when the news hits the wire that the Packers have cut Clay Matthews with the intention to sign him days later to a restructured contract, kind of like what they did with A.J. Hawk back in, I think it was 2010 or 2011, but I doubt they're going to go that route. I don't think you want to cut a Clay Matthews. That's just not a good look for the team. So $15 million is not what Matthews is giving to the Packers, and I think they might have gambled a little bit here that he was going to continue to be as productive as he is, or they might have some other options at this point in his deal. But because of the contract situations, and because two first-round draft picks, that being Nick Perry and Dayton Jones, took longer to develop or are still developing, the Packers find themselves in this situation. So the dollar amounts for both Cobb and Matthews are high compared to their production, but I think the Packers got to keep them around and suck it up because, honestly, they need them both. They need them both, and they both, I think, still have something to offer to this team, and especially if you're going to move Matthews back inside more and get some of that production from him. He's not going to get as many quarterback sacks, but I do still think he can offer something from an athletic standpoint in terms of going side to side, chasing guys down, maybe run support, and then also a little bit in coverage. So that's my take there. I think both of them are back in green and gold this next season.
Well, you just kind of teased the next portion of the show, and that's a story that I had just dropped today, and I don't mean to make this my self-promotion, but I've had some stories drop recently, and that's my opinion on what the Packers should do with Clay Matthews. Not only do I think they should keep him around, but last season, obviously, the big move was that Matthews was moving from an inside linebacker back to an outside linebacker full-time, and Matthews spent most of the season either on the shelf with injuries or playing through them, and that was something that got me to thinking as to what they should do. And I believe that the Green Bay Packers should make Clay Matthews a full-time inside linebacker. Matthews has already shown a willingness to be an inside linebacker and do what is best for the team. Now, whether or not he's still willing to do that, I'm not sure. I haven't spoken to Clay, obviously. We're not friends, so if he's not willing to do that, that brings up another discussion. But I believe that the best course of action for this team is a starting front seven of Nick Perry and Dayton Jones as your starting outside linebackers. I believe that would improve the run defense on early downs because Perry is the best run defending outside linebacker on the team. Dayton Jones did a good job as a run defender. And I think losing a little more weight and playing the position more would make him a better outside linebacker. I think you're going to get him back on a good value contract, a one-year deal worth about $3 or $4 million, maybe less than that. I don't know as far as that goes. But moving Clay Matthews inside gives you the athleticism I was talking about, putting him next to Jake Ryan, and it gives Clay Matthews is at his best no longer as an edge rusher running into 300-pound left tackles full-time. The other thing about Matthews was he's at his best when he's on the field, and he didn't miss a game as an inside linebacker. He did miss games immediately. He was out week three when he moved back to outside linebacker. Now, you can call that a coincidence. I don't believe in coincidences.
And then he was hampered by hamstring injuries and a shoulder injury through most of the season. He didn't miss any time as an inside linebacker. I think this keeps him healthy. It makes him easier or harder to target opposing offenses. It makes him a gap blitzer, which I think he's better at. It makes him harder to find. You can move him around more. I think he's just better suited to play inside at this stage of his career instead of an ineffective edge rusher, which, let's be honest, that's what he was by the end of the year. That's just dealing in reality right now, which is something the Packers have to do, is deal in reality, and that's something I think Clay Matthews has to do as well. It's better for him. It will keep him healthier. It'll make the run defense better, which is something, you know, you look at some of the teams you have to deal with to get back to the Super Bowl. One team that's not going away is the Dallas Cowboys. You have to deal with Ezekiel Elliott. The Packers are going to have to stop the run. Another thing is the spread attack of the Atlanta Falcons. Having athletic side-to-side linebackers, Clay Matthews is certainly that. You have to have him doing that, and he can rush the passer from that spot as well. That's something that I think will make the defense and the linebacking core as a whole faster. Putting him there, obviously you're going to invest a higher pick in a outside linebacker. You're going to have to do some revamping of that position anyways. I think this will just help the process along. It'll keep Clay Matthews healthier. I was okay with moving him back outside. I wasn't completely on board with it. But now I think that you got to keep him healthy. The Packers' defense is better when he's on the field. This is the way to keep him on the field. You keep him in the middle. You keep him away from – there's going to be plays. This is the way you keep him away from 300-pound offensive lineman on every single play. This way he can use his athleticism to his advantage. He can blitz the gaps. He'll still get his sacks. You can say you'll blitz him as much as you can. You can still use him on the edge occasionally the way that they did in 2015 and late 2014. He'll still get his sacks that way. They'll use him as a hybrid kind of player just like they did. But I think that's the best use for him is an inside linebacker next to Jake Ryan, or if they find another guy like that to use in the middle. But that, I think, is the best course of action. Jason, am I insane, or do you think this is a good move?
No, not totally on board with it, and I think the Packers have to do everything they can to try to get as much out of Clay Matthews before he really starts to decline and isn't at all the player that they need him to be. So, obviously, you stick with what works. They experimented with it enough in 2014 and 15 that they saw what he could do, and so you've got to do this. Now, what it does is it definitely leaves a little bit of a hole on the outside of the defense, and pass rush is key, obviously, especially in the base 3-4, and even in the nickel package that the Packers run, they still need guys to get after the quarterback. And we saw one of the problems, and usually when you look at the last three or four seasons, and probably even more, the games that the Packers have lost the most handily are the games where if you look at the box score and if you look at the pass rush, those quarterbacks weren't under any pressure. And so that's one of the biggest problems. I mean, Matt Ryan had all day to throw in that NFC Championship game. And there wasn't anything going on in terms of pressure on him. And so no surprise, they picked apart the Packers and had no trouble scoring points throughout the day. So they definitely have to have – they're going to move Clay inside. They definitely have to have a plan, whether it's like you said, bringing back Perry and Daytone Jones. Frankly, I think we kind of, as fans, maybe sometimes like the devil that we know versus the devil that we don't know. And I'm not saying that Nick Perry and Daytone Jones are the devil in terms of that they're not good. They are. They're both good players. And I'd be okay with bringing those two back. And maybe you sign Jayron Elliott to come back too and solidify the depth there. And if you want to roll with those guys, okay, that's fine. Hope they don't get hurt because Nick Perry doesn't have a very strong history of staying on the field. And Daytone has missed some time too, although not as much. I think his bigger issue is consistency, but when he makes plays, he seems to make some big plays and kind of makes them in bunches. What does that sound like? Sounds like Nick Perry. So if they can do that, and if the Packers can win that gamble, move Clay inside and get the most out of him that you possibly can, because 52 is still a good player. I still want him on the Packers, but let's use him as wisely as we can. Like you said, Jacob, his days of crashing into left tackles, it's got to come to an end because it's just painful. And he misses time, and that's when he gets injured and hurt. And I think you just need to go with the be safer and be smart about it. Keep him out of harm's way and get 16 games out of Clay Matthews. I think a lot of good things happen when you do that.
That it does. And now to like I mentioned earlier, the NFL Network had something on over the weekend. They called it Football Withdrawal. And what they did was they kind of played the best games of the season. And one of the games they played that I will watch the offseason anytime that it comes on, and that is this season's Packers-Cowboys game. And that, obviously, I watch it for obvious reasons. The second one, not the first one, because there's nothing memorable about the first one. But, Jason, we talked about it after the game ended. You know, where was this game eventually going to rank for you? Well, now that the emotion of that game is removed, because, you know, we talked about our reactions and those sorts of things. So now we're a full month removed. You know, that game was played on January 15th. It's now February 20th. That's a full month. That's enough time to kind of come down. The Packers didn't win the Super Bowl. So that game won't forever live in lore from the standpoint of that game didn't propel the team to a championship. But so now I think it's an appropriate time to kind of take a stroll down memory lane a little bit. So where does that game rank for you in terms of your all-time top five? So I'm going to rank it. And for me, number one is Super Bowl 45. There's no question for me. I was 19 years old, so it was the first cognizant Super Bowl that I can ever remember. You know, emotion pours out. It was incredible in every experience of the word. My team, for the first time that I could ever remember, was the world champion. I can remember going to school the next day. I wore my Aaron Rodgers jersey. I had a speech that I had to give on the Packers that day. So I can remember if they had lost that game, that speech probably wouldn't have been a very pleasant one to give. Thankfully, I gave it with a smile on my face the whole time. I was very happy that whole night. I didn't sleep very well. I remember laying down that night just with this feeling of just complete happiness, a big smile. I didn't sleep very well that night just because I was so happy. It was a feeling of complete satisfaction. Mike McCarthy says, you know, all the time, mission accomplished. I feel like I'm doing my job. And, you know, I didn't feel that way, obviously, because it wasn't my job. But just a feeling of, like, you know, finally, I equate it to what I imagine the Cubs fans felt like. Obviously, I didn't wait 108 years, and I, you know, some of the people that I work for now definitely suffered much, much longer than I did. But that's how I felt that night. So that game will forever be number one. I can't imagine anything ever displacing that. I'll never say never, but I can't imagine it. Number two is Super Bowl 31, because that's the day that cemented I was a Packers fan. I was 5 years old, and I'll never forget. You know, there's a lot of things that I don't remember from that game, which is why it's not number one, because it wasn't my first title, quote unquote, I remember. But I remember Brett Favre running around with the helmet over his head like a little kid. And I remember that's how I was reacting as he threw that touchdown pass to Andre Rison. You know, I remember everyone in the house, you know, my dad said that he was rooting for the Patriots to give me guff. But I remember I wanted that team to win the Super Bowl. And I remember going to preschool the next day and everybody wanted the Patriots to win because they were Bears fans or their parents were Bears fans. So that's the team they wanted it to be. So, you know, Super Bowl 31 definitely lives in lore for me. I've watched that game. I watch that game on January 26th every year, just like I watch Super Bowl 45 on February 6th every year. I have copies of DVDs on both. So I watch those every year, every time I can. Packers Cowboys checks in at number three for me because you have so much that goes into that. I hate the Dallas Cowboys. I've made no bones when it comes to, you know, the Bears and the Vikings. The Vikings and the Bears are 1 and 2 in terms of teams I hate. And after that, it's a hodgepodge, but the Cowboys are pretty solidly in at number three in terms of teams I hate outside the division. I don't like them at all. I don't care much for Jerry Jones. Their fans are insufferable. They always find a way to make the NFL season about their team, even if their team sucks. And this year, when their team was finally good, it was insufferable. I heard all week how the Packers had no chance to beat the Cowboys. And I mentioned, you know, I told you, Jason, before the game, I was going with my heart. And I picked them to win. I said, 34-31, Mason Crosby's going to win the game at the buzzer. And I told everyone all week that's how it was going to happen. And I'll be damned, that's exactly what happened. You've got the Jared Cook catch. You've got two Mason Crosby bombs. I've got you calling me right after the game, sobbing like a child. I've got jumping on my friend on the couch after the game. I've got unable to walk my girlfriend out from after the game because I'm like collapsing on the ground, telling her after the game, we always lose games like that. And finally they won one. That game checks in at number three for me. It's the greatest non-Super Bowl game that I can remember. Number four is the NFC Championship game, Packers and Bears in 2010, because that cemented the Packers were going to the Super Bowl. And I'll never forget that because it was against the Bears. And, you know, I mentioned earlier, that's where I live, and that's where everyone is. Number five is we want the ball and we're going to score. And that was the first year. You always have years where you always think, you know, teams are on. You always have a year where you think your team is on a magic carpet ride. And that was a year where I really thought that team was because, yeah, that's the year where Favre's dad passes away and you have the Nathan Poole catch to knock the Vikings out of the playoffs. And then that game goes into overtime and Al Harris intercepts a pass to go for a touchdown. And you think, you know, this just has to be our year. Unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. If you want an honorable mention out of me, I'll go with the Dez Bryant game just because of the Dallas Cowboys thing. I was at that game with some of my friends. I don't like Dez Bryant. And the Aaron Rodgers pass to Richard Rodgers was right across the field for me. And I remember audibly screaming, wow, when he made that throw. And I'm usually very reserved about plays like that that happen. But there would be my honorable mention. But 5-1, we want the ball. We're going to score. Packers, Bears, NFC Championship game, Packers, Cowboys, and both Super Bowls. But Jason, 5-1, what do you got for me?
Okay, so I'm gonna do 1-5, kind of like you did too, because mine is interesting because my history with the Packers goes a little further back. So I had to really think about this, and really what this comes down to, the theme of my five are how the games that I wanted the most. These are the games that I wanted the Packers to win the most. There have been a lot. There have been a ton. I've been in the stands for many. You never want to go see the Packers lose a game live. So anytime I've been there, I had to think about those. I had to think about all the games I've been to and all the stuff that I've been through. So for me, I've got the two Super Bowls, 1 and 2, but mine are actually reversed because I was about your same age when the Packers won Super Bowl 31 as you were when they won 45. So now everybody knows how far apart you and I are in age. But that was my first championship of any sort that my team won. And that was something that I'd always wanted, especially growing up for as many years as I did in Wisconsin. And I was at one time a Brewers fan. I was at one time a Bucks fan. Not any more of those two teams. Kept the Packers, even after I moved to Arizona. And watched Favre and this whole team blossom into what it was. Reggie White, Eugene Robinson comes in as a free agent. You got Andre Rice and Desmond Howard with all the kick returns. All the players on that team. So it was special. It was the first championship of any kind. So it's going to be hard to trump. I don't know how any even future Super Bowl might. That was the first one. So that's kind of my baby. So that's my number one. Number two, obviously Super Bowl 45 was an incredible day. The Steelers have always kind of been like my AFC team. So it was kind of special getting a chance to play against them. It was also special to keep them from winning their seventh. And keeping moving the Packers a little bit closer to maybe eventually one day becoming a team that has the most Super Bowl titles. And I know that the Patriots just keep racking them up and racking them up. But to keep Pittsburgh out of seven land was great. And obviously it was a championship for the Packers. Then for me, my number three was if Super Bowl 31 was my number one, then I got to go with the NFC Championship game against the Panthers in 96 to go to the Super Bowl as number three, because at one point they were losing in that game. Favre threw a bad interception deep into Carolina's own territory. Things were looking kind of bad, and then the Packers mounted a comeback and made some incredible plays. I'll never forget that wheel route to Dorsey Levins in the end zone that helped the Packers take the lead and really kind of run away with that game. So NFC Championship game 96, then followed by the other NFC Championship game win against the Bears in 2010. Jacob, you pretty much covered that as well as you could. I can't imagine being in your situation, what life would have been like had the Bears won that game and living there. So you were spared a lot of hell after the Packers won that game. And, of course, it's always awesome when Green Bay wins a game to go to the Super Bowl. So that's my number four. Now, my number five, this is where it gets interesting. So I was sobbing like a child after the Dallas playoff game, and that was very special because the Packers had their troubles in Dallas, and I watched all those playoff games in the mid-90s not work out. NFC Championship game, divisional playoff games, it always ended with a loss in Dallas, and the Packers were heading home. and they didn't have to face Dallas in 96 to go to the Super Bowl, so they never really got their chance to win the big game in Dallas or against the Cowboys in the playoffs. So finally, they come up against this number one seed who ran them out of their own home stadium earlier in the season, and not by score, but the Cowboys kind of ran away with that game, I think, and really outplayed Green Bay, and they were obviously the number one seed. They were the heavy favorites. You didn't think Green Bay was going to be able to stop Zeke Elliott. You know, we figured Dallas might run up and down the field. The Packers kept it close, and the magic at the end, hard to beat. But that's not my number five. My number five is a tie between two games. The first one is the 2010 game at Lambeau Field against Brett Favre and the Vikings. It was the first time the Packers beat Favre in a Vikings uniform, and I happened to be there. My wife was with me. She was at the time still a Vikings fan. She has since come to her senses and wears green and gold on Sundays, but she was in her Vikings jersey that day. I won't say which one. And it was a game for the ages. It was Rodgers versus Favre, and I remember just the whole weekend just being so nervous as if I was playing in the game because I kept thinking to myself, I really want to win this game. I can't have come all this way from Arizona to watch the Packers fall to Brett Favre again at Lambeau Field, and it was a close game. And there were some calls that could have gone either way, and, well, we don't have to talk about how the outcome could have been swayed, but the Packers pulled it out. That was a big one, and tied with that one goes all the way back to 1989 and a little game called the replay game with Don Majkowski at Lambeau Field throwing a last-minute touchdown pass to Sterling Sharp in the end zone to beat the Bears, only to have the call overturned because Majkowski stepped over the line, or actually I think the initial call was touchdown, and then somebody overruled it and said it wasn't a touchdown. And at that point, they were experimenting with instant replay. So it went to replay, and the referee comes out on the field, and I'll never forget this. He comes out on the field and says, after further review, we have a reversal. He put both of his hands up in the air, and I, only 13 years old at that time, am running around crying like a child because I had not seen the Packers beat the Bears since I became a Packers fan 3 or 4 years prior to that. So got to give some love to the Packers replay or the replay game against the Bears in 89. And that was before the Favre, Wolf, Holmgren magic. So hopefully I just gave our listeners who were fans in the 70s and 80s a little something to smile about. Because if you were a fan at that time and you watched that game, that might as well have been a playoff game or maybe possibly even a version of a Super Bowl, which the Packers had not even been close to at that time. So Super Bowl 31, Super Bowl 45, NFC Championship game against the Panthers, NFC Championship game against the Bears, and then a tie between the Bears replay game in 89 and Vikings at Lambeau in 2010.
Damn, you're old. No, I'm kidding. So the other thing I watched over the weekend was, for the first time, I watched A Football Life of Charles Woodson. First of all, Football Life is a fantastic documentary series. I watch all of them. Regardless if I love the player, hate the player, it doesn't really matter. I try to watch anything that I can. I love that football has its own network, but the Charles Woodson thing got me thinking of, like, ranking my favorite players for the Green Bay Packers. And I think this should be an interesting list too, Jason, because of our age gap. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. You've seen my list, obviously. I have not seen yours. So I'm going to rank mine from 5 to 1. And who, you know, your top five favorite Packers for, you know, whatever reasons they may be. My five, number five is Clay Matthews. You'll kind of notice a bit of a trend, I guess, maybe not on my list, but Matthews was a Tasmanian devil coming out of USC. He was a great pass rusher for a long time. I know he's gotten some guff for being quote unquote soft. I think that's asinine. I played with one arm for most of this year. He's going to be the all-time leader in Packers sacks eventually, I think, when it's all said and done, unless he gets cut this offseason, which, you know, like we said, we don't foresee. The real surprise on my list is number four is Brett Favre. You know, I mentioned he's my childhood hero, but at the same time, as I've gotten older, there's just something about scheming his way to get to the Vikings. I know I've said before, you know, 2 years of bad doesn't offset the 16 years of amazing. I know he helped, was a huge part of digging the Packers out of the doldrums of awful. I know he won them a Super Bowl. But I also know that a lot of my adolescent was him throwing a lot of really terrible interceptions and ending his last pass as a Packer with an interception, and he threw, it should have been, I mean, he threw to the only covered player on that play. And the reality is, and I'll get to this, there's a reality when it comes to Packers quarterbacks, and I'll get to that here in a minute. But Brett Favre, I love him. He's my fourth favorite Packer of all time, and there's reasons for that. Number three is Reggie White, the Minister of Defense. My friends, we have our own group. We call it the squad. They call me the Minister. Reggie's my favorite player, one of my favorite players. I loved Reggie White as a kid. The Jim Irwin call of the Super Bowl of Reggie got him again. I've got goosebumps right now just thinking about it. Loved Reggie as a kid. Loved everything not everything, but most of the things he stood for. Loved Reggie White. The whole thing of, you know, him coming to Green Bay really is a monumental move. I was talking about it on Twitter with some guys from Titletown Sound and Zach Jacobson of Cheesehead TV today. Just what that move means, I think, is really underrated, because guys like Reggie White just don't come to Green Bay for a wide variety of reasons. So I think that move really gets lost in the shuffle of what that meant for a guy like that to sign with the Packers. A huge move. You know, you had Brett Favre, but you needed that guy on defense, and Reggie was that guy. I really wish the Packers could have gotten him more than one Super Bowl ring, but thankful that they were able to get him the one Super Bowl ring. And really the story of the way that he died was – well, I mean, there's no great story of the way that he died, but the story that his son tells about the dream that he had was great. If you got a chance, you know, look up the story that his son tells. It really is something. Number two is Charles Woodson. I've talked about it before. My affinity for the Michigan Wolverines is something that has extended since I was a little kid. Charles Woodson was a Heisman Trophy winner at Michigan. He's the reason I am a Michigan Wolverine fan. I helped win a national championship for Michigan. And then he comes to Green Bay as a free agent, didn't want to come to Green Bay, but ultimately was the anchor of that defense, the leader of that team. He is one of four people. There's four people whose words I have tattooed on my body. Charles Woodson's one. The prophet Isaiah from the Bible is another. Bo Schembechler and Nikki Six. Those are the four people I have. It's a wide range, so feel free to laugh and ask why. But those are guys whose names I those are four guys I have whose words are tattooed on my body. I also have Charles Woodson's words engraved on a Super Bowl ring that I have from that season. So Charles Woodson's one of those guys who, you know, when you read something he says, you hear it in his voice. And he's also the only person who I've met a lot of people from my time of living in Green Bay and some of the opportunities I've had. He's the only one I've ever been starstruck by. And just watching, Frankie was kind of making fun of me as I was watching The Football Life, just because when he was like talking or making plays or something like that, she's like, "Are you smiling? Like, what's wrong with you?" kind of thing. I've just, I loved watching him play. He was a great player. I loved watching every minute of him. But number one is Aaron Rodgers, and it's because I think he's the best quarterback in the history of the Green Bay Packers. I think he has an argument for best quarterback I've ever seen. Jason, we got into a discussion over Twitter of, does he need another Super Bowl ring to solidify his legacy? I don't think wins and losses and Super Bowl rings and all that stuff is a quarterback stat. I was talking about Brett Favre earlier. I think Brett Favre is the third best quarterback in the history of the Green Bay Packers behind Aaron Rodgers and Bart Starr. And that's with all due respect to Brett Favre. I think that's talking about a Lamborghini, a Corvette, and a Porsche as to what's the best car. And that's – I'm no gearhead, so for those of you that are, I'm sorry if I disrespected you. I just picked three cars that I think are pretty cool off the top of my head. But Aaron Rodgers is a great player. I've had a lot of fun watching him over his career. But he just does things on the football field that I have never seen. And I know there's going to be a lot of people that talk about Tom Brady. There's nothing I've seen Tom Brady do that Aaron Rodgers can't. And there's things I've seen Aaron Rodgers do as far as throwing the football that Tom Brady can't do. That throw that he made to Jared Cook, there's no other quarterback in the league that can make that throw. That throw he made to Devontae Adams in the Bears game, it didn't even count, is a throw that nobody else in the league can make. Aaron Rodgers is amazing. We're spoiled by him. I mean, we're talking about a guy who last season had a great year by any other measure, and we're talking about what's wrong with Aaron Rodgers. That's how spoiled we are as far as quarterback play goes. But he's my favorite player in the history of the Green Bay Packers. He's incredible. He's a great player.
And I think that a lot of the criticism he gets sometimes is warranted, but a lot of times I really do think is unfair. But he's definitely number one. So Matthews, Favre, White, Woodson, Rodgers. Jason, we're running low on time. So when we don't talk for a month, I guess this is what happens. But feel free to, if we run out of time, we run out of time. But if you can, wrap it up for us.
All right, so four of my five coincide with yours in a little bit different order. My number five is Leroy Butler. I played safety for the 1 year I did play football, and Butler was a huge part of that 96 team, and he was a guy that was with the team when they were still kind of in the doldrums. So a lot of respect for Butler and everything that he did helping that defense get to the championship. He invented the Lambeau Leap. So let's give some love to number 36, the original number 36. Four for me is Favre, the gunslinger. Watched a lot of him grow up, watched him transform that team from mediocre when I started becoming a fan to winning a championship. So got to give the love there. But I'm really partial to some of the guys that made a huge impact and maybe recency bias here. So Woodson's my number three. I got Reggie number two. And then it's unquestionable. Number one, obviously, Aaron Rodgers, the best pure passer I've seen and had the pleasure of seeing him play live several times. So Butler, Favre, Woodson, White, and Rodgers in that order for me. And we could have gone on if we had up to 20 to list. There could have been so many other guys, but I'm pretty confident with those five as far as me, and a lot of that has to do with my personal history too.
Go ahead and send us your list if you've got one. Send us your top five, and then yeah, maybe we can rank 6 through 10 on our next show. But that will do it for today's show. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. You can follow the show on Twitter. We are at Packer Pulse. You can follow me personally. I am at Jacob Westendorf. You can follow Jason. He is at Jason Perrone. It may be the off season, but I've got a wide range of stuff. I'm doing this, Packer Pulse. I've got War Room with Ross and Cody Bauer talking draft. We're doing offensive line next week. We just had the tight end show drop, so check that out. Let us know what you think. We talked O.J. Howard, Jake Butt, Jordan Leggett, all kinds of tight ends. That's something the Packers are looking for. As far as Pulse of the Pack, we'll still be here all off season long, maybe not week to week like we were during the regular season, but we're still not going to take a month hiatus. We hope the combine starts next week. We'll try to come up with some conversation topics to keep it about football, memory lane stuff. That stuff I always enjoy. So yeah, we can talk about stuff like this 6 to 10, because those are conversations I always enjoy, but we will definitely be here. Baseball season starting. I can find ways to relate anything to football. That's something they've always said was a gift for me, but want to thank our sponsor all season long for sponsoring us. That was Ticket King. Next season's coming. Grab your tickets, go on in, and cheer on the Pack. Jason, I know you and I are already talking about which game we want to go to next season. So once we know that for sure, we will let you guys know which game we're going to be at. And you guys can maybe come in and have a cold one with us at the Stadium View or Green Bay Distillery or wherever it is that we decide to go for our pre-production meeting or whatever it is that we want to call it. But we're going to party in Green Bay next season. I do know that. I'm pretty confident in that. And one other announcement that I guess I do want to make is I am invading enemy territory, Soldier Field. And I only say that because I am excited. Metallica and Avenged Sevenfold at Soldier Field. So that is the only thing that can get me to Soldier Field. So that's exciting for me. But that's enough about me. That's enough about us. Thank you, guys. We're sorry about the month layoff, but thank you for coming back, loyal listeners. Without you, as I always say, we would never do this show. Thank you for listening to, as always, Pulse of the Pack.
Experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website at ticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.